You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the complex world of enterprise identity, securing legacy web apps at scale can be daunting. Strata Identity makes it simple. With Strata, you can effortlessly integrate non-standard apps with any identity service, like MFA or SSO, with zero coding and zero hassle. Designed by identity architects for identity architects, Strata works with every vendor, standard, and app architecture. This means your apps can now speak modern protocols and integrate seamlessly with your chosen identity services. From securing on-prem web apps to migrating away from outdated identity providers or consolidating them, Strata helps you keep your complex access policies as you modernize your identity infrastructure and get rid of technical debt. Join leading organizations like 3M, Dallas County, and CIBC in securing your apps with Strata. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your identity security priorities, and receive a complimentary pair of AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Connect today at strata.io/cyberwire. Yesterday's antitrust hearings in the U.S. House of Representatives focus on big tech's big data as something open to use in restraint of trade. And there are questions about community standards as well. The boot hole vulnerability may not represent an emergency, but it will be tough to fix. Android malware masquerades as COVID-19 contact tracers. The FBI warns against NetWalker ransomware. China says it didn't hack the Vatican. Justin Harvey from Accenture demystifies red teaming. Our guest is Christopher Allberg from Recorded Future on trends in threat intelligence. And somebody's spoofing a British MP. He's looking at you, People's Liberation Army. From the CyberWire studios at Data Tribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Thursday, July 30th, 2020. Amazon, Apple, Google, and Facebook completed by WebEx yesterday's testimony before the U.S. House Judiciary Committee's Antitrust Subcommittee. Bezos, Cook, Pichai, and Zuckerberg hewed to foreseeable lines during the testimony. The Telegraph thought they emerged unharmed. But observers thought the congressional inquisitors generally well-prepared. The House Subcommittee was interested in both anti-competitive practices and the roles the platforms have assumed in moderating content and influencing elections. The Wall Street Journal sees the central issue raised in the session as the economic and social power big data analytics have enabled big tech to concentrate. The chief's answers to both questions about alleged anti-competitive practices were to disclaim any attempt to use data they collect on their customers or partners to favor their own business at the expense of those customers or partners. They also said it wasn't their practice to acquire potential or actual competitors to clear the field for their own products or services. To questions about content moderation, with Democrats seeming mildly in favor of more of it, Republicans decidedly wanting less of it, the executives gave mixed responses that expressed an interest in enabling the free sharing of ideas, feelings, and experiences, but within the limits of safety and unspecified community standards. The representatives seemed well-briefed, equipped with news reports, corporate email exchanges, and stories from disgruntled competitors and customers. In fairness to big tech, the questions they were asked were sometimes complex, presumed that those testifying would have sufficient amount of detail at their fingertips, and were in most cases tendentious. They had the character of a cross-examination whose purpose isn't to elicit new information, but rather to get things you already think you know into the record. The answers stayed as close as possible to the statements the companies came in wishing to make. At several points, those testifying promised to return responses once they had the opportunity to check the information on which their answers would depend. Those follow-ups will cover specific cases of alleged anti-competitive practices, details on the composition of their fact-checking and other content moderation staffs, their use of data analytics and the specifics of content moderation policies or community standards in force at their companies. Two things seem likely, at least to our editorial staff who listened to the hearing. First, it will be difficult for online services to hang on to Section 230 immunities they currently enjoy while they exercise more gatekeeping with respect to content. The role of publisher and neutral public square are likely to prove ultimately incompatible. And second, big tech's antitrust problems are unlikely to go away. And as investigators continue to examine tech companies as incipient monopolies, those companies' access to and use of massive quantities of data will be the entering wedge of antitrust action. Eclipsium has found a vulnerability boot hole that affects the Grub2 bootloader used by most Linux systems. It could be exploited to gain the ability to execute arbitrary code even when secure boot is enabled. An attacker would need either administrative privileges or physical access to a device to infect it, however, which, as Ars Technica points out, if the attacker has those, you've got a lot of other problems to worry about. So, while boot hole is a widespread vulnerability, it's not a terrifying one and has earned a rating of moderate severity. But, as Ars Technica adds, not scary isn't synonymous with not serious, and boot hole is something that should be dealt with. Fixing it won't be simple. Eclipsium has an account of the various steps vendors will need to provide for their users before this particular hole can be patched. Eclectic IQ and its partners at Threat Fabric report that malicious Android packages have been found presenting themselves as legitimate, government-backed COVID-19 contact tracing apps. According to Bleeping Computer, the FBI has issued a warning that NetWalker ransomware is being deployed against government agencies, both in the U.S. and internationally. NetWalker has specialized in exploiting vulnerable VPN appliances, web apps user interfaces, and weak remote desktop protocol passwords as its methods of gaining access to victims' networks. The Bureau said, quote, two of the most common vulnerabilities exploited by actors using NetWalker are Pulse Secure VPN, CVE-2019-11510, and Telerik UI, CVE-2019-18935. The FBI discourages any victims from paying the ransom, and it recommends that organizations adopt familiar measures of sound digital hygiene to protect themselves from infection in the first place. China says it's always been firmly opposed to cyber espionage and that anyone who thinks Beijing hacked the Vatican, like, for instance, Recorded Future, whose report on Chinese operations has been widely cited, needs to put up or shut up, Global News reports. Give them specific evidence, says the foreign ministry. It seems unlikely that Beijing would find any evidence adequate, in either quantity or quality. The Holy See itself has declined to comment on the reports. And speaking of Recorded Future, the CyberWire's chief analyst and chief security officer Rick Howard checked in with Recorded Future's CEO Christopher Ahlberg for his insights on the latest trends in threat intelligence.
It actually, over time, has gone from open source data exclusively to down to sort of the electrons of the internet and trying to put all of that together. And that's been the sort of, we call that our security intelligence graph, that we connect all those dots. And that's been the sort of the really exciting journey in all of this.
So the point of all that is you're trying to forecast where the next attacks are coming. Is that the main function of the service?
I would say that that's one element, you know, and we have some pretty incredible success stories of that. But, you know, it can be sometimes when you're able to sort of see something ahead of around the corner. But then it can also just be where you're detecting something totally outside in. We had a really cool success here in the spring where this we'll just call it European Energy Organization, had been for a month leaking email data to a sophisticated actor. And we were able to observe that completely outside in and not just sort of do intelligence around it, but find the incident. And it blew people away that we were able to do it. And it was sort of connecting six layers through that security intelligence graph. So I think sometimes it's about forecasting, but it can just as well about being able to sort of help people understand things that are ongoing or make it easier to do incident response. So it sort of can be across that spectrum.
So can you talk about at a high level, I don't want you to give any secrets away, but how do you take this vast amount of unstructured data and turn it into something useful? Is there techniques that you can describe that people can use in their own organizations or any tips or tricks you can hand over to us?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, look, you take a big step back and think about, like, if you have a lot of data, so we use the Bloomberg analogy, you can use, you know, whether it's sort of a sales dashboard analogy, whatever sort of thing, understand the problem you're trying to solve. And I think you were getting that before. You know, don't just collect data for the sake of collecting data, even though sometimes it's pretty enticing to do that. We have plenty of that to be
you're right. There's a lot of people just collecting large, giant lakes of data and they don't really know what to do with it.
Yeah, which, you know, to be honest, you have to do some of that. I'm sort of a huge believer that as we collect all this data, you need to apply analytics. I think analytics is the word that I come back to. It's more than just simple data analysis and doing roll-ups and sums and minuses, and even though the simple is sometimes underrated. But the key is trying to understand analytically, what are you trying to do? It's really the secret that most people forget about. And that will inform you what sort of dashboards do you need to build? What sort of analysis do you need to do? What sort of automated correlations do you need to provide for? Understand the problem and be disciplined about that so that when you then don't, if you don't succeed, you can tune the analytics, tune what data you need to add, tune whatever you're doing. So you really think about it as an analytical process. And actually, I think a lot of people learned in the intelligence community can be put to work here, but it needs to be more data driven. And people are not thinking enough about that.
That's the CyberWire's Rick Howard speaking with Recorded Future CEO Christopher Ahlberg. And finally, whatever China might have been up to in the Vatican and the Hong Kong diocese, and candidly, it looks like it was up to no good, there are other allegations of the Chinese services undertaking some active cyber measures against an out-of-favor foreigner. Conservative member of the British Parliament, Tom Tugendhat, who chairs the Foreign Affairs Select Committee and has been critical of China, says he's been the victim of an email spoofing campaign in which Chinese operators send embarrassing emails and other communications from bogus accounts that purport to be his. The Express says that Mr. Tugendhat realized the campaign was in progress when a reporter asked him about a press release he'd issued, only in fact he hadn't issued it and was quite in the dark about it. No doubt, China's foreign ministry would like to see the evidence here, too. And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI. And joining me once again is Justin Harvey. He is the Global Incident Response Leader at Accenture. Justin, always great to have you back. I wanted to check in with you and get your take on red teaming. And just start with some basics. How do you define it? And how does it work within the organizations that you work with?
Well, red teaming is a concept where you take humans and you make them act like an adversary toward an objective. And that objective or those objectives that you define, there are multiple ways to accomplish them. You can do them through social engineering. You can do them through direct system and network exploits. And of course, there's always a set of rules of engagement around a red team operation that should be discussed ahead of time. Can outside tools be used like 0 days? There's also the behavior of the red team. Should you simulate being a nation state in an enterprise when nation states typically aren't targeting you? So you want to right size that red team engagement. There has been a lot of talk these days about automating red teaming, and I think that I'm a little bit of opinion here that until we can have a system that really mimics the thought process of humans, then we're likely not to see an effective automation of red teaming, because red teaming really requires the team to sit there and think about, okay, how are we going to accomplish the mission, just like you were, just like a normal adversary would, and then, of course, simulate it in an environment. There are ways out there to automate a lot of persistence, vulnerability checking, persistent network scanning, but I would never consider them part of a red team engagement.
When you're out there looking for someone to be a red teamer, you know, you're interviewing somebody or something like that, what are the attributes you look for? What makes a good red teamer?
I would say one of those attributes would be cleverness, the ability to think outside the box and be able to look at a problem in a different way. If you need to get access to a system, and let's say it's a pretty tight system, well, then you're going to think, well, how do I get in? If I can't do a direct network or system exploit, I don't have access to the system, how do I do it? And you want to watch your candidates or your red teamers' thought process to say, okay, how do I get in? Well, I can't get on via the network or the system. Well, how about if I get on via an administrator? Or what sort of communications are going in and out of that box and examining the network activity and maybe compromising a neighbor and then using that neighbor? So I think number one, maybe, and these are in no particular order, Dave, I'd say one of them is being clever. And I think another one is being a geek, being someone who is technically proficient and that just loves breaking into systems. And I could say the same is true for incident response and all of the other disciplines that we have in cyber defense, Dave, and that is you've got to be passionate about what you do. And that passion also has to be channeled into technical acumen. So red teaming, just like incident response, requires a pretty high degree of technical sophistication, being able to write scripts, being able to look at executables or network traffic, and being able to string a few of these together. And then I would say the third one would be knowledge of the library of attacks that are available out there. And I use the library like a capital L. There are so many exploits and procedures and tactics and techniques, and there's probably 10 times that many open source areas that you can go to find those tools. So knowing what tools are out there, knowing the systems you're attacking, and then being able to find the right tool for the job, and then of course being up on the leading edge. Some of the most successful red teamers at Accenture are always looking at the news and looking at open source intelligence and saying, oh wow, there's this new type of exploit that this other red team did over here. I bet you I could grab that code and apply it to this other situation here. So I would say those are the main three things that I look for in red teamers.
All right. Well, Justin Harvey, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Don't struggle to align your organization's cybersecurity with business risk. Get the only solution that goes beyond reacting to threats with vulnerability and risk monitoring. You need the next evolution of MDR, and only Critical Start delivers it. Critical Start doesn't just monitor and respond to threats. They put you in control by detecting suspicious activities, quickly responding to contain threats, and identifying your most critical assets and protecting them against vulnerabilities and exposures. With continuous visibility, expert guidance, and measurable risk reduction, Critical Start has redefined what it means to manage cyber risk. Demonstrate provable security maturity to your leadership while positioning your program to achieve the greatest risk reduction per dollar spent. Stop fearing risk and start managing it with Critical Start. Visit CriticalStart.com and request a demo today. That's CriticalStart.com.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Puru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow. And now a word from our sponsor, SpyCloud, the leader in operationalizing cybercrime analytics. Traditional threat intelligence is a thing of the past. Cyber criminals are stealing vast amounts of credentials, session cookies, and financial data every day, and it's hard to keep up. SpyCloud is the trusted partner businesses turn to fully understand their darknet exposure risk and neutralize threats before it's too late. SpyCloud alerts your organization as soon as an employee or customer's data appears on the dark net, so you can act faster than bad actors to prevent cyber attacks like ransomware, session hijacking, account takeover, and online fraud. With insights from the industry's largest repository of recaptured data, protect the digital identities and systems most important to your business. Get your free corporate darknet exposure report at spycloud.com/cyberwire and see what information criminals have in their hands today. That's spycloud.com/cyberwire.